Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time AquaFit participant.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that doesn't scare easily, unless you count the time I nearly fainted when, after seeing the Blair Witch Project, I stumbled across a bundle of twigs that had been placed oh so carefully on the windshield of my car. Just kidding, though I did check the back seat before driving away. Frights are on our movie docket this week, as we're going to look at two movies that attempt to fall in the horror genre. The first is Maxine, Ty West's third installment in his so-called X series, all starring Mia Goth. The second is Longlegs, a serial killer film that features the presence of Nicolas Cage, along with that of It Follows star Maika Monroe. Let's begin with a bit of X action. Or should I say XXX action, since that's how writer-director West chooses to spell his protagonist's name, with three uppercase X's. Goth plays the character, the same porn actress from West's 2022 film X, who survived the murderous happenings during a movie shoot on a remote farm. Now a confirmed porn star, Maxine is determined to break into Hollywood's mainstream film industry, and her chance to do so comes when she auditions for a part in a horror production. Trouble is, a specter from her past in the shape of a sleazy private detective, played by Kevin Bacon, threatens to ruin everything. But you should never underestimate our Maxine. Writer-director West is an unusually skilled director who makes unusual films. They aren't splatter flicks, though they do feature graphic violence. They aren't traditional horror fare, though they do feature aspects of the genre as well. They deal with serious social issues, from sexual and domestic abuse to women bucking the system feminism, but West is no card-carrying social activist. He is, however, a guy who makes movies that are immensely watchable, that often are as humorous as they are provocative, that pay tribute to the art of cinema itself, and that are likely to turn off as many moviegoers as they attract. And just like Maxine herself, he does so with a sense of confidence that borders on unflinching arrogance.
Yeah, and he's also something of a tribute artist. You sort of alluded to that a little bit, but these movies, especially the three X films that he's made, they're almost like scavenger hunts for references to other movies. I mean, X was sort of a Texas Chainsaw style slasher. Pearl, which was the prequel to X, which is my favorite of these three, kind of had this psychological thriller Wizard of Oz element to it. And then this one is definitely paying tribute to all of those really sleazy, low-rent 80s movies like
Absolutely.
Angel and Vice Squad.
Yeah.
But I was also reminded throughout of movies like Body Double by Brian De Palma. There's a specific sequence with some split screen where you think, oh, De Palma. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of Paul Schrader's movie Hardcore. I was thinking of Blood and Black Lace, the Mario Bava movie, because there's a killer who's stalking Maxine that's wearing, you know, this all leather getup, and it looks like pick your 1970s Italian giallo of choice.
All the place,
And then meanwhile, she's making this movie called The Puritan 2, which looks like, you know, all of those witchcraft and horror, you know, the video nasties of that
the
era.
The Corman era.
And even, you know, further than that. But, you know, it also has a lot of other stuff in it. And I just kind of felt that Maxine was ultimately, it felt very cluttered to me. It has all of these supporting characters that show up and you keep waiting for them to matter in any way. And they're just kind of there, maybe to pay reference to other characters or maybe just because he wanted to have this actor in his movie. So you mentioned Kevin Bacon, but you also have Giancarlo Esposito. You have
Lily Collins.
Lily Collins is the star of The Puritan One. Elizabeth Debicki is the director. And then it's trying to deal with all of these things that were actually happening in the 1980s. So you have, you know, the adult entertainment mm-hmm. industry's pivot to videotape. You have the Night Stalker who's out there and is supposedly doing these crimes that are plaguing Maxine. You've got just the satanic panic of that era that's definitely playing into all of this. And I like all of this in theory, and I've liked this series so far. And as you said, I think West is a really talented filmmaker. But none of this stuff really ever coalesced for me. And this felt like a letdown. And I think it's easily the least of the three movies, especially coming after Pearl, which I thought was so good.
I agree that Pearl is the best of these.
Yeah.
But I didn't like X. I mean, I thought that was a little bit too over the top by my standards.
And that's what I liked about it.
Right, I'm sure. But Maxine, there was something, I mean, I enjoy Mia Goth's performance. Mm-hmm. I thought that she took it to the next level in this portrayal. I also liked all the different pieces, but you're right. They never quite coalesce. And so if you're looking for that or you want that, especially if
yeah, this maybe is it doesn't
be,
matter.
If this is going to be the last of this three-part series, maybe you wanted things to be tied up in some way. But part of the problem here is whenever we talk about the horror genre, I mean, it really runs the gamut in so many ways. And we can talk about this a little bit more in the second half when we discuss the film Long Legs, because I never really know what to expect, because some of this is just over the top funny. I mean, of course, it's gory. I mean, Maxine is gory.
It's particularly gory in at least three different instances.
It is. It is. But having just watched the three-part series Mastermind about the FBI profilers and
the
Ann
real-life
Burgess,
story behind Mindhunters.
Yeah, Ann Burgess in particular, who still at age 87 is a professor working on these psychological profiles. I mean, this is still something that has currency even today. But maybe that's why this Night Stalker part of this didn't quite work, because maybe I've seen too many police procedural serial killer movies and so forth. But actually,
guys,
I like this a lot better than you did, I think, Nathan.
You guys keep talking about it doesn't work. Like, I love this movie.
Really?
And part of why I love this movie was because it has an energy that goes all the way through it. There's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
And, you know, he stops it at particular moments, and we're talking about Ty West. He stops it at particular moments and he goes, look what I can do. And, you know, that may throw some people off, but it didn't me. I just went, yeah, I remember that from these other movies. And sure, that plays into the genre.
Well,
and then he gets
right
back on it and it just runs.
And
there's
part
such
of this takes
energy.
Place on a movie set. And so that's
absolutely.
What, you
know,
he's
so if always you're talking telling
about paying- you. Yes. Homage to different things that have happened.
I just
in
think
the past.
There's an energy to this movie that was lacking in both of the other ones. And, you know, so this one is my favorite of the three.
Interesting. Okay. Well, yeah, I think the stuff with the references to the other movies, I just don't think it paid off as well as it did, particularly in X, which I think is. Pearl definitely is referencing other things, but it's less referential than either this or X were. And I think that makes sense because these are set in the 70s and the 80s.
I will admit, though, that part of my perspective is shaped by the fact that in the early 70s, I spent a lot of time going to triple features of Cash Flag movies, 2000 Maniacs, Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Sure.
I saw all these movies. And so it threw me back to that era.
Wizard of Gore.
Yeah,
well,
that's exactly.
And the thing that probably worked the least in this movie for me was the whole storyline with Bobby Cannavale and Michelle Monaghan.
Oh, I forgot about
they
that.
They were detectives that were investigating this. I don't think that
doesn't
worked.
Work.
And I had some mixed response to Elizabeth Debicki. I mean, I think that she is portraying this sort of hard-edged director during this time when women weren't allowed to do things other than be porn stars.
Right.
And so I wasn't so sure about her
but
performance.
But you had to love Kevin Bacon. You know that Kevin Bacon saw this script and he said,
I'm going to chew the scenery to the max.
I get to die like that? I get to die like that?
That is pretty,
oh,
well,
yes.
And he feels like he's in Wild Things mode again. Like, this is sleazy Bacon. Well, and then you also have, you know, the scene where they're driving around the Universal backlot and they're running around the Bates Motel set.
Yes.
And it does just kind of feel like a hat on a hat a little bit, in a way that I know people that had that same problem with X. They felt that it was too beholden to its own references. And I thought that all of that came together in what it was trying to say about film, about horror movies, about film production, that I think I liked the first two so much that this did feel like a letdown, but it sounds like it was the opposite way for you, where you thought they got better as they went.
Yeah,
almost.
I did. I thought
and
so, yes.
And of course, I liked Pearl the best.
Yeah,
so.
Me too.
And Mia Goth got better as the movies went along.
Well, I think she's at her best in Pearl. I thought in this one, the Maxine character, I never quite got a handle on what they were trying to do with her as a character, because she, like, commits violence. We see that she is capable of that after having gone through hell herself. But then she's also this kind of waif in a certain way. Like, I was just kind of confused as to how they wanted that character to function within the story.
I loved, and I thought everything was wrapped up in the scene where she walks out of the audition and she addresses all the other young ingenues and says, y'all should just go away because
but
I
then,
nailed
but
that.
But then she doesn't really behave that way through big chunks of the movie.
No, no.
And I was sort of kind of confused by that.
And I thought that was an interesting take on
that
her
is a great
particular
scene.
Character.
The opening of this movie is really strong. I'll give you
that. Well, and also, I mean, you were saying, here she is, this British actress, and she's, you know, adopting this
I never
Louisiana
would have suspected.
Accent, you know, and then we have have the whole backstory with Shia LaBeouf and, you know, their relationship. And I find her to be a fascinating, a fascinating actor.
Well, you know, if he wants to keep making these movies, I'll still go see him. So,
absolutely. Anyway, that was our discussion of Maxine. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Long Legs. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
According to a recent NPR survey, 70% of our listeners prefer to purchase products and services from public radio program underwriters. Spokane Public Radio listeners appreciate program underwriters because they also help support the station and programs they listen to each and every day. You can find information about becoming a program underwriter and our current underwriters on our website, SpokanePublicRadio.org, under Business Support Underwriting. Through this relationship, we can all help keep the region growing strong, whether it's our diverse business community or Spokane Public Radio.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Maxine, the latest horror feature by Ty West starring Mia Goth. Let's now turn to another Fright Night feature, this one titled Long Legs, and featuring another offbeat performance by Nicolas Cage. And though Cage does play the title character, with his usual idiosyncratic sensibilities turned up to 11, the star of Long Legs is Makeham Monroe, who, despite a busy resume, is likely best remembered for being the clueless college student in the 2014 film It Follows. Here, Monroe plays an FBI agent named Lee Harker, who, in a rather convenient twist, has a kind of sixth sense that allows her to see aspects of a crime not visible to anyone else. The crimes she is assigned to investigate are a series of murders of families, all tied to the birthday, on a specific date, of young girls belonging to each family. Overseeing her is her supervisor, Carter, played by Blair Underwood, and the target they mutually end up pursuing is the one played by Cage, barely recognizable under a pile of makeup. Still, there's a twist coming, one involving Harker's mother, played by Alicia Witt, Harker's own buried memories, and some sort of holy entity uniting them all. The film gradually becomes predictable and increasingly unscary, despite writer-director Oz Perkins' painstaking efforts at developing the plot slowly, cinematographer Andres Arochi's careful staging, Monroe's deer-in-the-headlights performance, and, of course, Cage, who probably should never have taken this particular horror bunny out of the box.
Whoa. Long Legs, if you've seen the trailers, it's hard to imagine that you can really capture everything about this film because it's so many different films in one. And that's why when we talk about the horror genre, you know, it trips into humor at one point, which seems a little anomalous given the subject matter with which we're dealing. And so I think that the story here, focusing on the character of the FBI agent, I mean, we're thinking, oh, is this going to be like Clarice Starling in Silence of the Lambs? What's she going to bring to this performance? And she plays it really deadpan through most of the film. As a matter of fact, I think she smiles twice in the entire movie. And so we're waiting to see if she's going to be attacked directly, if she's going to, because of her clairvoyant or sixth sense intuitive skills, if she's going to be the one to crack this case that nobody else has been able to solve, etc. So there's a focus on her. But then, of course, as soon as Cage gets involved, I mean, it's like game over as far as the horror genre aspect of this is concerned, because he plays this so over the top. I mean, I burst out laughing like multiple times, I think. And so I think that's when we talk about horror films. Are they supposed to be scary? Are they supposed to be graphic, gory slasher films? Are they supposed to be funny? Are they supposed to be some combination of all of the above? And I'm not sure this film ever knew exactly what it wanted to be, because it has aspects of each of those things that I described. So Long Legs, you know, I don't know. I'd probably take a pass on this one, but I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
Well, you know, they do say that comedy and horror are linked in the sense that laughing and screaming offer a similar catharsis.
Release, right, yeah.
So,
and the endorphins, yeah.
Yeah, and to answer your question about what is horror supposed to be, to all of those questions, I would say yes, they're supposed to be whatever. You know, I think that's what I have liked about the genre is that you can kind of do anything within it. And horror right now is the only genre where people are taking real big chances.
Yeah. Or they're repeating themselves over and over,
sure,
like a Quiet Place.
But that's any genre.
Okay, here's my problem. The reason why I'm willing to give Maxine and Longlegs more latitude in terms of what's happening is because they don't involve fake things. Like, I hate, can't we come up with aliens that are better than like huge bugs or spiders or robots? I mean, so these things seem much more frightening to me because they're real. I mean, because we're talking about real people, real scenarios, things that could go awry rather than
also
these,
mental illness, yes.
Right. Or these people who came from outer space, these creatures from outer space.
I tend to agree with that. I usually find something that's more earthbound scarier because it feels like something that could really happen. But then you see a movie like The Thing, and I don't know, that's pretty scary. Alien is pretty scary. But to get back to Longlegs, I feel like I've been hearing about this movie for months.
Right.
From all of these, you know, breathless reports coming out of like festivals or preview screenings, talking about how twisted and terrifying it is. And yet I went into this movie having no idea what it was about. I somehow managed to avoid any kind of trailer.
We didn't know what it was about either. Even with the trailer.
And I always love that. If I can go in cold, I much prefer that. And this really pulled me in for that first hour. This has a terrific first act. The way it's set up, I'm glad that you mentioned the cinematographer, Andres Orochi, who I was looking it up. This is his feature film debut as a cinematographer.
Oh, really?
And it's beautifully shot.
Because it captures 1990s Oregon.
Yeah, it
although
really
it was shot in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Well, of course.
And it uses negative space really effectively. There are scenes where we're constantly looking over Micah Monroe's shoulder to be like, is there something back there? And sometimes there is. And it's very creepy in that way. And of course, I couldn't stop thinking about The Silence of the Lambs for so many reasons. I mean, they even dress her very similarly to Jodie Foster in that film and all of David Fincher's police procedurals. There are locations in this movie that look like sets from Seven. And I kind of agree with you, though. I think that once we start to figure out what's really going on here, my hands closed on Air a little bit. I thought maybe this is a film about disassociation because there is sort of this running theme of like she has this kind of sixth sense, but also there are big gaps in her memory and why is that? And you've got this religious extremism happening with her mother, and it, of course, all connects in a way that you're either going to find dramatically satisfying or a little bit empty. And I kind of felt like it was a little bit empty. And I don't know. I also kind of agree with you about Nicolas Cage. I thought, you know, he's having fun in this. But the more I saw of him, like when they show him in the beginning of the movie, it's really creepy. There were moments in that first scene in Longlegs where I got actual chills. Yeah. It was so unsettling. But then the more you see of him, you do start laughing. And I thought, is this deliberate? Am I supposed to be laughing?
Right.
I don't know.
And that's why that whole first act works, because
it's really
you
strong.
Only see him first as this silhouette in this family station wagon, which seems so anachronistic to what is going on there, anomalous, actually. But then when you first see him, you only see him from the mouth on down.
Yeah.
You don't see his eyes
which
or anything.
Which is a great choice.
Exactly.
Great
because
choice.
For me, what is most scary about movies like this is the less you see, the less you know.
Totally.
And then your own imagination.
Most of the time.
Exactly.
Yes.
Most of the time.
And well, let's talk a little bit about the director.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Oz Perkins, or Osgood Perkins, is, we should say, the son of horror royalty. He's Anthony Perkins' son. So we talked about Psycho in the first half, and now here it comes again. And he's an actor, but he's also made a few horror movies before this. He did a movie called The Black Coat's Daughter. I think it was his first film that has stuck with me. It's one of those movies
that's streaming. You can catch
it's
that.
It's very unsettling and probably kind of divisive because it has a similar sort of cerebral style to it like
and,
this
and
one
I love
does.
The title of I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
Another
which
weird
is a Netflix
one.
Movie.
And I have to say, this is probably his most narratively approachable film because it is, I mean, in a lot of ways, it is a pretty straightforward police procedural until it isn't. But I do think it's impeccably made. I think that he just has such an eye and he knows how to use the camera
to convey the tone of the movie was so spot on.
But yeah, I just kind of feel like the wheels come off the track at a certain point with this one. And as they were explaining, like there's literally a point in this film in Longlegs where they say, here's what we did. Here is how it worked. And I kept thinking, I don't know if I want to know how
this
works.
Well, see, and that's part of the problem. If you really want to be scared, then you want to have an ongoing mystery. You
I want it to follow me out of the theater.
Right. Yeah. You want to have some sense of resolution, but not complete.
Yeah, yeah,
We haven't talked about Blair Underwood.
Yeah.
I thought he was quite good. He added an energy to the film that was a complete opposite of what Malcolm Monroe's character was giving off. And there were a couple of moments I was trying to make the point that horror works best. What you remember about a horror film isn't necessarily the feel of the entire movie, but specific moments in movies. And there's a moment dealing with the actress Michelle Choi Lee, who is the other FBI agent, and there's something that happens to her that comes out of nowhere that I went, oh
yeah.
Wow.
I know what you're talking about.
If the rest of the movie had been like that, I might have thought it was a lot more scary than it actually is.
Yeah, and I also think that these advertising campaigns, and we've seen a lot of them now that kind of go viral because they're really underlying the, you know, the intensity of the contents of this thing, you know. I think they ultimately kind of do a disservice to the movie because I think people go in expecting to be scared out of their wits. And then if they aren't, they feel like it's a disappointment. And that's my disappointment about Long Legs isn't that I wasn't rattled to my core because, you know, that's not quite what I was expecting. I just don't think that the screenplay has – it's satisfying and unsatisfying at the same time.
Yeah, it's hard to capture what happens here because it's sort of – and it's not that it goes in different directions necessarily. It's just that the way
that it's – it follows a pretty logical –
right. The way that it's sort of multi-layered, ultimately, like you said, you came up with air. And,
yeah.
But still, you know, hey, go get some air conditioning. You know, laugh at Nicolas Cage, whatever. But I mean –
well, and I'm sure this is going to work like gangbusters for a lot of people. I mean, like comedy, horror is a deeply personal thing. And so –
it's getting,
you know,
a lot of good reviews, just not necessarily on this show.
Well, I think it's all right. It's impeccably made, but yeah.
Yeah. And that was our discussion of Long Legs. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Maxine. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial. We'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from Woody Allen. I'm not afraid of death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.